Kicking off hour number two right here in the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. You're listening to Three and Out. I'm Houston Kress alongside Davey Hudson and Tanner Carson on the ones and twos. As our fearless leader, Nate Hodges, drives to St. Louis for God knows what. No one really knows. I teased it before we went to break. Driving in this morning, there was an interview on FS1 with Doug Gottlieb talking about teams that could, make the Final Four and ultimately win it. He did, in fairness, put Tennessee in his upper tier. He said Duke, Virginia, Gonzaga, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Kentucky are the teams that he feels like has the best shot to get to a Final Four and ultimately win it. He then put teams like
Top six teams he has as the as his top tier teams.
Not quite, because he did not put Michigan State in there.
It's Big Ten.
He flipped up Kentucky and put Kentucky at six and Michigan State at and that's where he said the tier broke. He said when you get to teams like Michigan State, especially with the recent injuries. With Michigan, Houston, Texas Tech, Florida State, so on and so forth. They're kind of hot and cold type teams that don't match up well in different styles of gameplay. Obviously, he loves Duke, likes Virginia. He has Duke, Virginia, Gonzaga, and Kentucky in his Final Four. And because he was on with Clay Travis, Clay naturally asked him about Tennessee. He said, I would put Tennessee in there, but Tennessee is a little scary for me because they don't have good point guard play. He then went on to say, it's tough for me to pick brackets because I know too much. I have too much knowledge of the game of college basketball, so it's very difficult for me to not overthink some of these things. Not good point guard play. Jordan Bone, on the season, averaging 13.5 points per game, 6 assists, 2 turnovers, and he plays 32.6 minutes a game.
Statistically, he is the best point guard in the SEC.
I mean, Doug, buddy, what have you been watching? Not to mention our backup point guard / sometimes go-to point guard, Lamonte Turner, was like the only guy awake when you played Auburn, and he also hit a really big shot against Kentucky to put you over the top. He's averaging right at 4 assists a game, 10.6 points, and only 1.6 turnovers, and he's been playing 30 minutes. Obviously, his numbers, especially in minutes played, have gone way up since he got inserted into the starting lineup. He's played in 25 games. Obviously, Jordan Bone has played in all 34. I was just stunned to hear expert Gottlieb. Self-proclaimed expert Gottlieb, and just ask him about it. He'll tell you. Expert. To say like that point guard play is our Achilles heel, and not that it's like inconsistent, but just that it's not good, I was very surprised.
And it's just such an uninformed take to just go out and say that. Like, Bone was a semifinalist for the Bob Cousy Award, which is for the best point guard in the country.
Who ended up winning that, by the way?
Have they announced?
I don't know.
I'll look it up right now.
Okay. Maybe they haven't announced yet.
It'd probably be Ja Morant. Like, I mean,
a lot of people had Waters up there, obviously, because when he played, LSU was really, really good. Hagans, does Hagans run the point for Kentucky?
He does, but yeah. I don't think.
I know he's a defensive guy.
Yeah,
even
his stats aren't good enough.
Even though Bone in two, well, I need to go back and add up the third game, but the first two matchups, Bone was like crushing Hagans offensively. Bone, I think, was Tennessee's leading scorer in both games against Kentucky in the regular season.
They
haven't, that game at Rupp was
announced.
Ridiculous. Okay, they haven't announced.
Cassius Winston, Josh Perkins, Gonzaga.
Perkins is really good. But, I mean, what number of finalists, like what cut did he make? Did he make the 8 cut?
I want to say he was top 10.
Top 10? I don't know, man. Like, I just feel like with Bone and Turner at point, Tennessee has pretty damn good point guard play, depending on the matchup. And that's what's been nice. And I think it's probably cost Tennessee a game or two. I think LSU, because Bone was sick that day, so it's kind of weird. But I thought they ran Turner a little bit too much as the pure one, and then obviously Turner with that horrible shot at the end of the was that right? I guess that was the end of overtime, wasn't it? The three that he launched with a leaner, that's
which
a really bad
led
shot
to Grant's foul.
So I agree that our point guard play at times has been inconsistent, but I think that's because we were preparing for a tournament run in which you have two guys who you feel really good about bringing the ball up the floor. Not to mention, Turner's on-ball defense against Kentucky was stupid good. Sensational. He forced at least one of those late two turnovers during Tennessee's run in the last 2.5 minutes that got you over the top. Obviously, he had a baseline layup to, I think, start the run, if I'm not mistaken. It either came right before or right after Admiral's three that I guess everyone kind of uses as the kickoff point for the run. But Turner had a baseline layup in there that was a great shot, and then obviously the three from the top of the key to give you the lead that you never relinquished.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a team that won the national championship that did not have a quality point guard that was up for at least several awards. Last year, Jalen Brunson, he won it for for Villanova.
Brunson.
When North Carolina won it, they had Joel Berry.
Yeah, I don't think point guard play is Tennessee's problem. In fact, I don't know what I would say is Tennessee's problem from a purely like basketball perspective. I just think it's, do we show up or not? So if you want to say they're inconsistent as far as effort and intensity, man, I'll give you that one, especially late in the year. Although I will say Tennessee had all of their tough games stacked towards the end of the schedule. Not to mention, you know, you beat Kentucky in the semifinals in the late game that day, and then have to turn around and play a team in Auburn. Yes, they were playing their fourth game in 4 days, but guard-heavy teams like Auburn that run five wide, like they don't really get tired, whereas guys like Kyle and Admiral and Grant, big guys, it takes a little bit of energy out of them. And then Bone and Turner were the ones late against Kentucky running all over the place, trying to lock down Hagans and lock down Johnson. I think that's probably why they turned the ball over so much. I think the legs were a little heavy and the arms were a little heavy, and dribbling and running at the same time was just a little bit tough. But for Gottlieb to say point guard play, buddy, you clearly aren't watching what we're watching. I mean, have you watched the Tennessee game all year, bud? That stretch in the middle of the season, I don't think I've ever seen a Tennessee point guard play as well as Jordan Bone was playing. And I think the only reason late you haven't seen his numbers continue to kind of keep that pace, because there was a stretch there where he was over, was he up to 11? Did he peak at 11 average assists per game? He was right there behind Perkins, if I'm not mistaken. And as a team, Tennessee was number two in assists behind Gonzaga, playing a much tougher schedule.
Michigan State assist. Gonzaga was always leading the field goal percentage marks.
Well, they were up there. They were up there in both. So it might have. You're right. It might have been Michigan State total assists, and I think Gonzaga was like three or four. But yeah, it was field goal percentage was Gonzaga again because they don't play anybody. Then they get beat by St. Mary's. Sure, why not? I just like it's frustrating for me when I tune in to like expert national media on college basketball. It's one thing if they have a legit reason why Tennessee, you know, is going to struggle or they don't think they can make it to the Final Four, but when they just make something up, I just don't get it.
I mean, isn't that all Stephen A. Smith does?
It's been a bad year for Stephen A., man. Like, he's just been saying things just out there.
Wasn't there a clip of him getting, like, eight things wrong in the span of 9 seconds?
Yeah, it was him talking about the Chargers versus Ravens game, and I remember he was just, like, talking about, like, Hunter Henry, I expect him to have a big game. We're like, Stephen, he's not out. Played all season.
He's
like,
out.
I
don't he's
know,
out for this one.
I don't know what I can tell you. You just see, like, Teddy Bruschi's face. It's and like, then, this guy's an idiot.
And then he came back, he's like, I've been working really hard. Like, I've been doing the late-night boxing and the late-night NBA, and it's like, okay, man, that's fine, but, like, you know, you can't just be wrong. Like, you're getting paid a lot to have opinions. Opinions are fine, but you can't give stats and just be wrong. If that's how informed your stats are, how informed are your opinions, pal?
Dwayne Haskins, he's more of a runner.
The guy ran like a 5'2". Like a 5'2". I think he had negative rushing yards this year at Ohio State with the sacks. More of a runner. How did Steve, like, he looked at Dwayne Haskins. Like, he just saw a black quarterback and said, Dwayne Haskins more of a runner. No! Dwayne Haskins, one of the...
threw 50-plus touchdowns this year.
Dwayne Haskins... like, if not for Kyler Murray, Dwayne Haskins is up there. Like, he's the guy. In fact, there was a time where they thought still that Dwayne Haskins might go ahead of Kyler Murray, but now, obviously, with Kingsbury in Arizona, they're thinking that's the guy. But, man, it's just like, guys, can we be a little bit more informed? Like, how does Jordan Bone not get more national credit?
I mean, I kind of understand.
Like,
it.
He does by people who look at the stats and are just looking for point guard play. But, like, nationally, no one's like, wow, this guy, hey, he's really good at Tennessee. Is it just Grant and Admiral take the shine?
Yeah, because like, when you look at most teams, the third guy isn't really getting that much credit. Like, you can see two guys getting the conversation built around them, but after that, it just starts to fall off. I mean, you look at all the top programs right now, like for Virginia, it's like Kyle Guy and DeAndre Hunter, and then Ty Jerome sort of gets left off. For
Virginia as a team, though, is not sexy. You know what I mean? You know those two guys. I would say most people in the SEC and the Big Ten and the Big 12 could not name a Virginia player.
But like, well, just an example for a team like Duke, like it's all about Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett. Cam Reddish kind of gets left out as the third guy, even though he's going to be a top five pick in the draft this year. Whenever you're looking at Gonzaga, Perkins,
Hachimura,
yeah, and then. I can't even think of the third guy who's actually done a whole lot. See, like, it's just that third guy just typically gets left out.
But his name's so easy. Jordan Bone. Be one thing if it was a weird name, but this is a very unique and easy name. Doug Gottlieb. Very disappointing. And people, like, listen to him for expert analysis. Like, people this morning were probably like, oh, bad point guard play. Well, don't put Tennessee moving forward. I mean, Jordan Bone definitely won you game two against Kentucky. I feel like I could just go down the list. Like, he had a lot of games right there late mid-stretch of the SEC schedule where he was unstoppable. And that's a guy, as far as improvement, I feel like early in the year, everybody was kind of looking at Kyle like, wow, he's really improved. Kyle has since leveled out. But Jordan Bone has continued to be mostly spectacular. And, I mean, that's the thing. He did most of his damage late and in the second half of the season. I'm just like, Doug, what are you doing, buddy? What are you doing? I mean, does anyone have trust issues with Jordan Bone as point guard? I mean, like, in the SEC, legitimately, and I'm like, would you trade right now Tremont Waters for Jordan Bone?
No.
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 Like, I wouldn't. Is there a point guard in the SEC that you would say, yeah, like, I would take that guy over Bone?
On this team, no. Absolutely not.
I mean,
I'm honestly just trying to go through every list. Like, if you're just going based purely on skill, I would take Darius Garland, but he ain't even played, and he's going to the draft.
Right, yeah. Yeah, like, since he's not even at Vanderbilt anymore, like, I'm going to take him off the list. He was a good player and totally tanked their season.
He'll be a lottery pick.
But, like, I can't even look around this league, and especially for him to have Kentucky in the Final Four. I'm like, buddy, if you want to talk about bad guard play, like this is one of the – like, least three making Kentucky teams of all time, and now you've got P.J. Washington, a little gimpy. I don't know. It's just weird. Just Doug being Doug. Chris tweeted in and said he probably stole that take, which is kind of funny. Doug Gottlieb, most famously known for being a thief of takes and teammate stuff.
And also was famous for putting his basketball shorts on backwards.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was him. That was him that wore them backwards. Did he end up switching those, or he just playing them?
No,
I did it on purpose.
He had to switch him like during a timeout or something. Like, the whole team had to like huddle around him so the crowd didn't see him take his shorts off.
That's good. That's good.
So he had good teammates. He couldn't return the favor, though.
In fact, he did the opposite. We're gonna take a quick break. Come back. We'll start breaking down this bracket, tomorrow's schedule.
I will say, just like when we were talking about top players, if you want, Sports Illustrated did release their top 50 players in college basketball this year.
We went through the top two yesterday because Grant was second. There's my tease for the next segment. I am curious as to where Admiral came in, so we'll talk about that next.
Pass out. Frank. Wake up. Frank. Fade it. Frank. Fade it.
Welcome back, Three and Out, Fan Run Radio. This segment brought to you by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. They are celebrating all year long their 85th anniversary. That's 85 years of service to the East Tennessee community. They have an app. They have online banking. They have plenty of financial services. They're local. They're small. They're East Tennessee-based. And their whole goal is to be approachable. They are member-focused. And you'll notice that the moment you go in there. No judgment, no shame, no fear, no problem too big or too small. That's what sets the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union apart. They're going to be bringing you the entire broadcast tomorrow, our pregame coverage, game day coverage, and Monday. Hopefully Monday is an enjoyable experience. 23 branches across East Tennessee, more coming soon. Check them out at tvacreditunion.com. I still can't get over Gottlieb's stupid take on freaking Jordan Bone. Top 50 players in the NCAA tournament. Mentioned this yesterday. Zion Williamson, obviously number one. He is the story of the tournament. Doug Gottlieb also said that Zion makes Duke likable nationally.
I don't think they make Duke likable. It's just easy to like Zion.
Is it?
If you
Tanner,
ignore
do you like
ESPN.
Zion? If Tennessee basketball had not made the NCAA tournament, would you like Zion Williamson?
I like him as a person. I like watching him play. Okay. I don't want to further.
Yeah, don't pile on with the praise.
He's only going to be there for 1 year, so people can go back to like not rooting. I don't think people root for Duke. They just want to see Zion play it up, and
they want to see him jump.
Yep.
Is that
the fair take?
Pretty fair. Yeah. They just want to see Zion jump. So he's number one. Grant's number two. Who are the other notables?
Yeah, I was going to kind of run through this, but this was the top 50 best players this season in college basketball.
Okay, so not necessarily in the tournament?
No, this is just like for the entire season. And I was just going to...
How good are you, though, if you're on this list and you didn't get
to the tournament? I was just going to hit on some notable players. Luke May, Houston, your lookalike, 43rd.
We're pretty much the same guy.
Country. Tyler Hero.
43rd?
Yeah. Right behind Tyler Hero.
They have Luke May behind Hero?
He is a bucket.
Not against Tennessee.
Quindary Witherspoon, Mississippi State, 39th.
So good.
Let's see.
He's the key, man. You gotta shut down Q, and you're going to be good against Mississippi State. That's the key.
Fletcher McGee, Wofford, he's 28th. I only wanted to bring that up because Jake Jones tweeted in at us and said that Wofford's Fletcher McGee needs four threes to break the all-time NCAA three-point record.
That seems amazing. That I'm just now hearing about this, and he's four threes away from breaking it. Four to break it, three to tie it?
Yeah. I want to say the guy who owns the record played at Oakland, which I just remember Tennessee used to have to play them, and it seemed like they had our number.
Fletcher McGee?
Yeah.
That name seems made up.
It is a pretty cool name.
That's kind of a fake name. I have to change my name because I did some stuff in Las Vegas, and I'm in witness protection, but I still want to play basketball. Fletcher McGee.
26th, Tremont Waters, LSU.
Okay. 26, really?
Yeah, that's high. Yeah, that's
seems
what I was
high.
Thinking.
For a guy who missed so many games, okay.
But the player for the Vols that came in at number 15th was Admiral Schofield. So
I'm assuming no Jordan Bone in the top 50.
He did not make it. Tennessee had two.
Gottlieb probably read this list.
Schofield on the season, 16.3 points a game, 6.3 rebounds, 2 assists in a game, and a shooting clip of 40.4% from three.
Really? Even with that crazy slump, he's at 40?
Yeah.
Dang.
In addition to having – this is the write-up they had on Admiral. In addition to having one of the coolest names in college hoops and even having singing chops, Schofield is right there alongside Williams as half of Tennessee's star duo. A former three-star prospect ranked only 251st on the 24/7 sports composite, the senior has had one of the best career arcs you could ask for. Wow.
It's a complimentary write-up there. 15th, yep. Too. Wow.
Admiral came in right behind Chris Clemens of Campbell, and if you've kept up with that, Chris, the leading scorer in the country this year, averaging 30 points a game. PJ Washington came in at 13th.
Does that have a little asterisk that says when Reed Travis plays?
It did say it took Washington a bit to get going this season, but he's really taken off in the second half to help the Wildcats hit their stride.
Couldn't take off and get that put back in at the end of the game against Tennessee. Hey-o!
His foot was hurting. He couldn't get the lift on the shot, Tanner. He was banged up. Man, I really would not play him if I'm Kentucky. I'm not trying to give them a game plan, but I'm not playing him against Abilene.
I'll run through the top 10 players here. Ethan Happ, Wisconsin.
Really?
Number 9. Yeah, Cassius Winston, Michigan State. Arguably, there's a good chance he wins the Bob Cousy Award. In 8th, Roy Hachimura, Gonzaga.
Love that name.
7th, Marcus Howard of Marquette. Be a fun matchup to watch with him and Ja Morant today.
4:30 p.m. TBS.
6th, DeAndre Hunter, Virginia. Jarrett Culver of Texas Tech came in at number 5. Ja Morant, as I just mentioned, number four. He's at Murray State. Number three, R.J. Barrett of Duke. Grant Williams of your Tennessee Volunteers came in at number two. And the write-up, I'll read the write-up on Grant. The 6'7" Renaissance man picked up where his 2017-18.
How about them using Renaissance after we did that segment last week? You think they listened to the show? How many Renaissance painters can you name, Tanner?
Painters?
Yeah.
Off the top of my head.
Yeah. Can you name one?
I mean, I guess Da Vinci counts.
Yeah. He's the big one.
This article came out on March 14th. Do you remember what day we did that?
I think it was before that. Just name the Ninja Turtles, and you get four Renaissance painters. Raphael,
Michelangelo.
Okay. There are others. But I can't remember them now. I did a whole thing. It was fine. I guess what area they were, and I got it right.
My art history is kind of rusty. Okay. It's okay. Yeah. Sorry.
I did. Going off
it was
this,
Davey's fault. He mentioned the painting.
Yeah, you threw me off.
Hand of David or something.
I did not actually know this on Grant, but it says he led the conference in win shares and box plus minus minutes and placing in the top six nationally in both.
Man.
I mean, for me, that's like the most telling stat.
Yeah,
you
like
can
how much
have
of an,
as a
how
player.
Much of an impact do you have on your team's wins and losses and every minute you're on the floor?
And if
led the conference in both. Wow.
And number one, really to nobody's surprise, Zion Williamson. But I mentioned this off air the other day, but to be sandwiched between the first and second overall pick in this year's NBA draft,
yeah, not bad.
That's
for
pretty
Grant.
Remarkable.
Not bad at all for Grant.
Especially for a guy who came in not really expecting a whole lot out of him as far as being a national headline player in his junior season. I'm trying to think of a player in the SEC that's won National Player of the Year that was as lowly recruited as Grant, and I'm just like completely drawing a
blank.
Yeah,
dude. Like, I mean, I'd have to go back and look at the list and just kind of see like were they big time when they got there? Because I mean, obviously, all the guys at Kentucky who have won it were enormous stars before they even stepped on campus. That's just kind of the way it's been. Who was the guy at Georgia? Did he win it that year?
Oh, Yonte Maiten. You're talking about like further.
Maiten,
yeah, he won Maiten, it last year.
I was thinking yeah. further back, but Maiten might be a good. That might be
I'm,
a sneaky
I'm
good pick.
I'm looking that up. Yeah, that was, last
I was
year.
Thinking of the point guard that helped them win the SEC tournament that year.
Oh,
I can't remember.
Gosh.
They weren't very good that year though, so I don't know that he actually won Player of the Year.
I think he did.
I will tell you, Yonte Maiten was he was a 3-star out of high school, okay. 225 in the country,
still
class
higher,
of 2014.
Still higher than Grant.
Yeah.
What was Grant?
251.
Mm.
I think, or wait, maybe
spots.
That was Admiral.
Well, wasn't Admiral was higher ranked than Grant? Was he not? Why can I not remember that guy's name for Georgia? He was a.
You're gonna like it's one of those names that as soon as I read it off.
Yeah, but the moment I hear the name, I'm gonna lose my mind. I want to say, I can't remember now. We'll get it later.
I don't think he. Are you thinking of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope?
No,
but because he didn't lead them in the tournament win.
I know exactly who you're thinking of, Chris. I just can't think of his name.
But are you Houston? Are you asking if he won Player of the Year that year, though? Or are you just wondering if he was?
Golly, I just got a just text. I knew.
Who is it?
Sundiata Gaines.
Yep, that's it.
Man, he's so good. Shouts out to my boy Reed. He's listening in the Sunshine State. That makes me so mad. He was friggin' unbelievable that year. They made that run. In the SEC tournament. How do I forget a name like Sundiata? Are you kidding me? Yeah, he was fantastic. But, Maiten, that's a good one. That's fine. That's a close
I'm
a
looking
close
up
pick.
Sendarius
but
Maiten,
Thornwell. But he didn't get nearly the national pub that that Grant's getting because that team just wasn't quite as good.
Actually, Maiten was lower on the recruiting list than Grant was. Grant, according to 24/7 Composite, was 191st nationally.
Oh, really? 191? Yeah. Dang.
Tiring of thought.
So I would say it's more impressive for Maiten, but it's really not because Grant went two-time. He went back-to-back. Take that.
I was just looking up the recent Player of the Year winners here. Remember Scotty Wilbekin at Florida? Those really good Florida teams.
I've tried to forget him, but yeah.
Yeah, he was a two-star prospect.
No kidding.
6'05" wow. in the class of 2010.
Scotty Wilbekin.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good name. Wilbekin. Yeah, the SEC list doesn't have the MVP Oh, no, yeah, they do. So let's see. Bryce Brown was this year's MVP. I actually did not know that. Last year was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Makes total sense. De'Aaron Fox the year before that. Tyler Ulis the year before that. Willie Cauley-Stein. Wilbekin was your tournament MVP in 2014.
They beat Kentucky by one that year.
Marshall Henderson, the year Ole Miss won it in 2013. Boy, they'd probably like to wipe that name off the list. John Jenkins, when Vanderbilt won it in 2012. Darius Miller, John Wall.
Whoa. In 2012, Kentucky didn't win it? That was Anthony Davis.
Says Vanderbilt 71-64. I'm with you, though. Jarvis Venardo in 2009, that was the one. That was the one Tennessee should have won without question. He scored 61 points against that Mississippi State team. Just a shame. And it was the year before that Sunday out of Gaines, when Georgia went absolutely crazy. They beat Arkansas by 9 in the championship. Before that, some really good players. Al Horford, Torian Green, Matt Walsh. Ugh, gross. Gerald Fitch, Keith Bogan, so on and so forth. Yeah, I'd say Grant's doing pretty good. No SEC tournament MVP, though, even though he was my pick this year. I had it. I was so close.
Very close.
I had it. I mean, if we beat Auburn, I think it has to be Grant that's MVP. I would have swept the predictions there. Man. You win some, you lose some. Break down the bracket next. We comfortable with that?
Yep.
Look at the schedule for tomorrow. It's a big day. It's freaking Christmas in March. We'll open our presents next. Segment 3, hour 2 of 3 and Out, right here in the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. I've said it all morning, I'll say it again. We're going to be at Elkmont today from about noon until, the final game reaches halftime or so. I don't know when they're going to close down today. Unless any of you guys are just dying to see the end of that last one. I don't think they're going to... I think they do stay open later on Thursdays, though. But Baylor-Syracuse tips off at 9:57 on True TV. We'll be there till at least that one. I would think. Tip off anyway. Elkmont Exchange, we're going to be there today, tomorrow, and Sunday for round 2. All day today, all day tomorrow, and then Sunday for Tennessee's matchup. My guess is against Cincinnati, but Iowa's keeping that spread pretty close. We've broken down a little bit of today's schedule. I do want to look ahead at tomorrow. See, tomorrow's schedule to me is just infinitely more interesting. You start the day, 12:15, a big one for Tennessee. Their round 2 matchup will come from this game, Iowa-Cincinnati, 12:15. At 12:40, Oklahoma-Ole Miss in the 8-9 matchup. I think Ole Miss is a slight favorite in that one. Texas Tech will face Northern Kentucky at 1:30. Kansas State-UC Irvine, I don't really care about that one, at 2. And then the big one, the one we've all been waiting for, Colgate-Tennessee, 2:45. It is the CBS game, so you can probably watch that one wherever you are. If you're driving around town and want the national broadcast, we will be airing that live over the air on Fan Run Radio. It'll also be available on our app as well. If you don't have the app, you should download it. It's free. Just search WKGN in your Google Play or Apple iTunes App Store. Gardner-Webb, Virginia, 3:10. Virginia, is there a hangover from last year, or do they just come out and beat the hell out of Gardner-Webb? Is this like a 10-minute... we're nervous, and then it doesn't really matter because it's Gardner-Webb, because that's what everybody thought last year. It doesn't really matter. Baltimore County, they'll hit a couple threes early, but it's Virginia. They'll lock down and get back in this game. And they were never – I mean, they were down 10 early, and then they ended up losing by 20.
This game is going to be out of hand very quickly.
You think so? You think they come out just angry for greatness?
Looking back last year, I mean, obviously there's really no excuse for getting beat like they did. Or losing it all as a one seed. But it was just a completely different team once DeAndre Hunter went out. They're not missing anybody for this game. And, what more could you want if you're Virginia as far as having a reason to come out and actually just, light the world on fire?
I guess. I can't tell, man.
It's basically the same team.
Right. That's just such a bad hangover to have. You did it once, you can't be the team that does it twice, and certainly not in 2 years. But I do wonder, did that game last year, does that give 16 seeds a little bit more, firepower moving forward? 16s in general, does it put ones on more of an alert in this game? Because until it happens, you're never really thinking it can happen to you. Now that it's happened and it was last year, like, are all the number ones kind of, I mean, coaches certainly will say, now look, Virginia came out last year and said, you know, you can't lose this game. It's impossible. And they got beat by damn near 20 or 20, whatever it was. So are 16 seeds more juiced, or does this maybe widen the gap a little bit because now ones have to be more alert based on what happened to Virginia last year?
I don't think the ones have to be. I think the fans will look at it like they have to be. Does that make sense?
But don't you think coaches of the one seeds are saying, hey,
oh, yeah, that's definitely a talking point.
This can happen.
Yeah, they now have a reference point.
I mean, I'm not worried about Virginia against Gardner-Webb, but I don't know. I do wonder if they come out slow. Like, if things don't go well for Virginia early, is that something that creeps back into the psyche? That just, like, starts to weigh on you as, oh, God, we're going to do it again.
Like, how many times do you think the announcers mention that game last year?
It'll be mentioned in every game this tournament. Last year, though, it was every game the rest of the tournament happened.
But Virginia, as far as just the Virginia Gardner-Webb call, or is that something they're just like,
it'll get mentioned.
Yeah.
I mean, whether Virginia's up, down, or tied, it'll be. Now, last year, don't forget last year, you know, Gardner-Webb's doing exactly what Maryland-Baltimore County did last year. Last year, oh, I think it's kind of interesting. Arizona State, who won last night over St. John's, will face Buffalo at 4. This is one I'm kind of interested in. Number 12, Oregon, who's hot as a pistol, will take on number 5, Wisconsin, at 4:30. Get a little bit of a break after that game. The next game doesn't tip off until 6:50. That'll be the 8-9 matchup between Utah State and Washington. Utah State's been pretty good. They beat down Nevada. Did they beat Nevada twice or just once? Did they get them? They did twice. Look out. North Dakota State, which is funny to me. Duke, congrats to North Dakota State on their win. North Dakota State, like,
that was a good game.
They're like sneaky good. They're always good, and they're like, their football team wins their tournament like all the time. And now they're in the NCAA tournament, and congrats for making it. Here's Duke.
Isn't their coach from North Dakota State football? Isn't he the guy who's taking over at Kansas State?
I'm not sure. Probably would be a good hire, though, because that guy had been there for a long time and just kept on winning. How do you get good athletes to North Dakota State?
I don't think they got good athletes. I think it was just incredible coaching and player development.
But you got to have decent athletes to make the NCAA tournament, right? No? Maybe?
I don't know.
Anyway.
I mean, I was watching them last night, and it just kind of looked like those kids you get from the middle, out in the Midwest, just corn-fed.
Just... like they tack the goal up to the back of the barn and then they work on their shot, that kind of stuff. Ricky Rudd style. Number 14, seeded Georgia State will take on Houston at 7:20. Liberty, Mississippi State, 7:27. Iona, North Carolina, doesn't really matter. UCF, VCU, the 8-9 matchup, that one does not interest me at all. Really, the late games aren't very good at all. Ohio State, Iowa State, 9:50. And your final game tomorrow, 9:57, St. Louis will take on Virginia Tech. Obviously, the early afternoon games tomorrow will tell the tale. Iowa-Cincinnati, 12:15. Like, part of me wants Cincinnati because I think our guys are a little bit more focused when there's an environment that you got to have to work around. Like, when you go to Florida, when you've got Memphis fans chirping at you, it's like Cincinnati and Ohio people in general are kind of known for being ornery, jerks, mean. I know Cincinnati isn't like the biggest, best fan base or anything, but like you wonder if maybe they could get up for a round two game against Tennessee. Currently, Cincinnati, 3.5-point favorite, 59.8% favorite according to the BPI over Iowa. Cincinnati, 28-6 on the season. Iowa, 22-11.
They were sixth in the Big 12. Was the last time you played Iowa, was that when you were in the first four?
Mm-hmm.
Made that run to the Sweet 16?
Yep. I would love if Iowa could somehow beat Cincinnati. That'd be awesome. I mean, you could just feel great about penciling yourself into the Sweet 16.
I don't think it's like that far
happening.
It's a 7-10 matchup. It's fairly even.
No, that's the thing. Like, Cincinnati's good, but their style of play is like they're going to be in close games. They're going to try to play great defense, but they're not going to score a ton. You know, they're not Auburn. They're not going to shoot a bunch of threes. They're going to try to get offensive rebounds. They're going to try to play good defense. They're going to get you late in the shot clock and see if you can create something. I still don't hate that matchup for Tennessee, but I would love to go up against Iowa. That would feel like the Tax Slayer Bowl all over again, where, oh, yeah, this is going to be a good matchup, and then Tennessee's up by 20 just like that. At least in my mind, that's kind of what I see happening. Again, that's your first game tomorrow. I don't know if that's good, bad, or doesn't really matter, but obviously the winner of that one will get an extra, you know, three-hour break before game two on Sunday. I don't think 3 hours really matters. But they go at 12:15, Tennessee Colgate 2:45, and then some other good games in between. I guess we'll start looking a little bit at this Tennessee Colgate matchup. Joe Lunardi says Colgate red hot and Tennessee playing up and down the second half of the season. He's not really sure what to expect. Tennessee, though, as I mentioned earlier, 17.5-point favorite, and they gained a tenth of a percentage point on the BPI from 95 to 95.1% favorite. Davey, what did you say? 15-2. What's that record over the last? Is it like 5-80 something?
It's not good. I'm trying to think of the exact number
for the 15 seed, obviously. It was bad.
Yeah,
it might have been lumped in with the ones and twos.
Yeah, I'll try to find it during the break.
All right, we'll do that next. Little Tennessee Colgate preview again tomorrow, 2:45 CBS. We'll break it down on the other side. Final segment, hour two, Three and Out, Fan Run Radio right here, Fox Sports Radio, Knoxville. Tennessee, Colgate. Over-under set at 148. Grant Williams, of course, your leading scorer entering the game, 19 points a game, 56.5 on the field goal percentage. 82.6 at the free throw line. Not bad at all.
The stat I was trying to find.
Oh, yeah, here we go.
All time.
Yeah.
The 15 seeds are 8-128 against the 2 seeds. But since 2012, 2 seeds are 24-4 versus the 15 seed.
24-4 since 2012?
Yeah.
Feel pretty good about that. Although it is a little bit swingy, coming back a little bit for the 15 seed.
Yeah, you really, you had 15 seed win 2 games in 2012 when Lehigh defeated Duke and Norfolk State defeated Missouri. Then in 2013, Florida Gulf Coast, Lob City.
That was a fun run.
Defeated Georgetown. And then in 2016, Middle Tennessee State defeated Michigan State.
Kermit.
But I mean, you had a big break. I mean, between 2012, the last time that it happened was 2001. Between those years. So I wouldn't really be betting on a 15 to beat a 2. I'll put it that way.
I ran a poll either yesterday or the day before, the Sweet Peas Barbecue poll question. It was, are people really afraid, or are you kind of pretending to be afraid? And like 76% of the vote was not afraid at all or just pretending to be afraid.
Here's a few more tidbits. Roughly 25% of the matchups have been decided by single digits, almost double the amount of number 16 seeds. Only one 15 seed has advanced past the second round, and that was when Florida Gulf Coast did it.
Did they make it to the Final Four?
No.
Okay.
I want to say they had to. They ended up getting beat by an SEC team, I believe.
Was it Florida?
It was either Florida or Kentucky.
I think it was Florida. Because that was kind of a big matchup.
Yeah. But, oh yeah, we got into this. But the most noteworthy time a 15 almost beat a 2 seed, Winthrop versus Tennessee, 2006.
Oh, that's right. Shouts out to Lofton for that fadeaway in the corner. And for Stanley Asumnu not getting a technical for running on the floor before the game was over. Dodged a big bullet on that one. Here's what Joe Lunardi said about Tennessee. Tennessee missed on a chance to earn a number one seed by losing 84-64 Sunday to Auburn in the SEC Tournament Championship. Nevertheless, the Volunteers are ready for the 6 games it will take to get them the one title they really desire. We've had a terrific season, said Rick Barnes, but we want more. And I think everyone that is in this tournament wants more. Whether that's how you're defined or not, it is what it is. You hope your players step up to it and can make the most of it. Lenardi goes on, with National Player of the Year candidate Grant Williams, Admiral Schofield, and Jordan Bone. Lenardi knows about Jordan Bone. I should forward this article to Doug Gottlieb. Fronting a deep, talented roster. How about deep? We're not really that deep anymore. We're not as deep as we hoped we would be. The Vols have a nucleus that anyone outside of Durham or maybe Spokane would envy. Tennessee ranks in the top 20 in Division I in scoring, field goal percentage, free throw percentage, and assists. Williams, who enters the tournament averaging 19 points and 7.6 rebounds per game, while canning 56.5% of his field goal attempts, says the Volunteers have accomplished a lot, even though they didn't win the regular season or conference tournament titles. Not many teams get 29 wins a season, says Grant. I think we've done a lot this year. I want to go all the way. As for Tennessee's opponent, Colgate enters the game 24-10 on an 11-game winning streak, once 5-5 in its own league. Colgate won its final 8 regular season games, then swept through the league tournament, beating Bucknell 94-80 on March 13th to earn the automatic bid. The Raiders feature 6'10" forward Repelis Ivanauskas, 16.4 points per game, 7.9 rebounds, and 6' guard Jordan Burns, not to be confused with Jordan Bone, 15.8 points per game, 5.8 assists. Ivanauskas earned Patriot League Player of the Year, while Burns pumped in a career-high 35 points in the victory over Bucknell. During the winning streak, the Raiders have averaged 11 three-point makes per game and outscored teams by an average of 11.5 points per game, converting 51.5% of their field goal tries. They rank 15 in Division I in three-point percentage at 38.8%. Colgate has played just one NCAA tournament team this season, losing 77-56 at Syracuse on November 21st. And then, obviously, the winner advances to face the winner of Cincinnati, Iowa.
I don't want to correct you, but I feel like you got to, whenever you say Ivanauskas, you got to really put the emphasis on the Ivan. Of the important things we have to talk about.
I like Auskas. I think the Auskas, like Ivanauskas. So you like Ivanauskas?
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, when it comes
I'd like to hear him say it.
Eastern European names, I feel like Ivan's in 60% or more.
I think that's probably a little high. Okay, so during the win streak, they're hitting 11 threes a game. Tanner, I don't know if you heard it. I broke down Tennessee's magic number for threes that they have to hit in a game, and it's 8. Tennessee has only lost 2 games all year when they've hit 8 or more threes in regulation. It was Auburn both times. How many threes can you give up tomorrow and really not have to worry about it?
I think at Tennessee's offense is still doing what we all know what they're capable of. If Tennessee's offense plays at a high level, man, you could probably give up 10, honestly. Because think about some games that Tennessee's won comfortably, but an opponent kind of stuck around or made the game a little closer.
During the win streak, like that's
South Carolina, Arkansas.
Vanderbilt. Like that's the only reason those games were even close is because those teams were banging in, 10, 11, 12, 13 threes.
So if you're still scoring, I mean, it would be annoying if Colgate's hitting 10, 11 three-pointers. But I mean, as long as you're not turning the ball over every other possession like you did Sunday, you're going to win.
So, like, is that your biggest fear, that Colgate just bombs threes? But even if they do that, isn't it still kind of contingent on Tennessee just not showing up offensively?
I was going to say my biggest fear is just turning it over like you did on Sunday.
Surely to goodness, we can't do that again. God. I don't know how you go from single-digit turnovers in the last 2 matchups against Kentucky and then drop 17 on the ground against Auburn. On the season, real quick, Colgate averaging 75.8 points per game. They're giving up 70, which actually not terrible. Tennessee on the year averaging 82.3 points per game and giving up 68.2. That's 85th nationally in points allowed per game. Colgate was right around 15 assists per game. Tennessee is still way up there at 18.5. And rebounds per game, actually pretty close. Tennessee, 37.7. And I want to say Colgate was right around like 36, 37, 35.6, so right at 36-ish. I just think show up on this one, get the win, and then see Cincinnati or Iowa in Columbus on Sunday. Hour three next.